Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Now back to America This Week, live with Father Matt Malone and Carrie Weber.
You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I'm Carrie Weber, along with Father Matt Malone, and we are speaking with the president of New York University, John Sexton, and we invite you to join the conversation at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. Now, John, before the break, we were talking about the fact that you were able to kind of internalize this Jesuit education that you had had through high school and through college at Brooklyn Prep and at Fordham University, and really kind of put it into practice in your work at NYU and make it kind of come to life. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that has been in the day-to-day. You talked a little bit about sort of how it looked in the university level of these global campuses, of this ecumenical vision. But what does it look like in sort of your day-to-day life there?
I think that day-to-day, it's the simple Jesuit maxim of ratio studiorum. In other words, as St. Ignatius put it, if you're given a classroom, if you're given a school, certainly if you're given a university, you have to be able to articulate what your goal is in that kind of sacred space of teaching and learning and research. What are you trying to do? So I'm a teaching president. I was a teaching dean. I think I may be the only president and dean in the world that continues to teach a full faculty schedule. And when I walk into the classroom, or when I encounter a student, even if it's not one of my students from my classroom, it's a teachable moment. And the question is, what am I trying to accomplish? What's the goal? I'm sorry. And then I have to order everything I do toward that goal. So the construction of a syllabus, the construction of a class within a syllabus, the construction of a conversation. When I'm done with this call, I'll go to a town hall meeting with the students here, which I have regularly. That's a teachable moment. There's a certain kind of discourse that should occur there. There's a certain kind of preparation for it on both sides. There's a certain kind of spirit of engagement, of kind of iterative conversation that has to occur. And I think all that flows right from a Jesuit education, frankly.
And it's interesting that you should refer to the classroom as a kind of sacred space. And this is something you also talked about in your book, and you know about actually seeing a ballpark as sacred space. And I wonder if you could unpack that a bit. And how do you think about that?
Well, the Baseball is a Road to God class went through several stages. The first stage was one of these teachable moments when a student came up to me and challenged me that he heard that I was a baseball fan, and how could he be a fan of something so boring? And in that moment, I seized it and I said to the student, look, if you'll do a directed research with me, where you'll read a dozen books and do a dozen papers, by the end of it, you'll believe that baseball is a road, not the road, a road to God. And he took me up on that, and that teachable moment then grew into the course. It turns out it's a tremendous vehicle to both teach students about religion, because it uses the techniques of the study of religion, like Marcia Eliade and Rudolf Otto and William James, right, authors of that sort, on the phenomena of religion, and applies it to something that the students initially find it to be strange as an object of, quote, religion, close quote. But they find that, as with the surface things like the stadium, there is sacred space. There is the sacred time that we're going through now, kind of the high holy days of the playoffs,
right,
you know, culminating in, you know, the great day of the World Series. So you can see liturgy in baseball. There are surface things that are there, but as the course develops, it turns out that it's a perfect vehicle to teach students to contemplate and to meditate. And they begin to understand that, for example, in baseball, there's a sharpening of those skills because most of the action occurs between pitches.
Right.
You know, is the runner going to run? Is there going to be a bunt? Is, you know, where do the players play? And the it ends up being a vehicle to teach them noticing skills, which are very close to the contemplative, meditative skills that we associate with spirituality.
Yeah.
And then you get them to go to the Grand Canyon.
Right.
And by the way, it's also simultaneously, it turns out, a big lesson for them on the danger of certitude and triumphalism.
Hmm.
Because, you know, there is no faith if there's no doubt.
Exactly.
So certitude is the enemy of faith.
Exactly right.
And you learn that in baseball, there's always doubt.
Right,
and
right,
there's always
right.
a necessity for faith. But most of all, what they learn is you become, as we were talking about earlier, a Red Sox fan or a Yankee fan, more or less because it's what you become at birth. It's what you're given.
Yeah, it's inherited. I mean, I suppose some people would say it's a gift, right?
Yeah.
Like faith that's given, that's handed on.
But unlike, you know, the Crusades or the other religious wars, even today, to which we could point, we tend not to go to war over baseball. You know, we can perhaps.
Well, on Yaki Way, we have done that.
There have been a few bloody noses.
Oh yeah, right.
but in any case, there comes a moment of epiphany for the students when they say, "Well, wait a minute. If this is true here, then maybe it's true in other places where I've felt certitude in my life."
And that's a very interesting point because I was not, as a boy, a huge baseball fan. I mean, I played it and I followed along with my brothers, my father, my mother. But I really became a fan in adulthood because I realized exactly what you said, which is that most of what is happening between the pitches, right? And it actually reminds me of something else that you said in your book, which is that the most important things that we can say about God are actually beyond words, right? There's something about the there's something about realizing that the most important communications occur in gestures and in symbolism and in even in calculation, but they are. But when we put words to them, it's actually, in some sense, a retreat from the transcendent nature of all of that.
This is part of the foolishness of fighting over verbal formulations. You know,
right.
We call it in religion doctrine or dogma. I mean, the heart of the wonderful migration that I saw when I started my doctoral work at Fordham with an extraordinary man named Ewart Cousins, and Ewart at the time was the world's leading expert, I think, on St. Anselm. By the time I got to the NYU Law School faculty 20 years later, 1983, Ewart was inviting me to the United Nations to celebrate the publication of the 60 volumes Paulist Press series on world spirituality that he propagated. 60 volumes representing 25 faith traditions. It was a tremendous migration. The unifying thing in his 60-volume work being the spiritual dimension, the ineffable, what you just were referring to, Father, the ineffable, that which can't be put into words. And it turns out so many, you know, when I came to realize that my wife, Lisa, loved me as deeply as a human being could love me and vice versa, it wasn't because she convinced me with a syllogism or vice versa.
Right, right.
And we couldn't put that in words. And in the end, love is ineffable, and love is the ultimate.
Right. And I think one of the really powerful things about both baseball and sports, sporting sports teams in general, I think, and faith is the community that it builds, this kind of automatic sense of community by being sort of a member of a certain tribe that ideally you really feel a part of and you feel you're not alone. I know when I lived out in Arizona, my parents from Massachusetts came to visit and my mom was wearing a Red Sox hat and we passed another person wearing a Red Sox hat and they automatically sort of had like a nod and a friendship and a conversation.
And secret like, handshake.
Yeah, But they were, you know, they automatically felt a desire to converse, to bond and to talk about these things. And often I feel the same way on, say, Ash Wednesday or something when everyone sort of has this outward sign of, yes, this is what I believe and this is the tribe I'm a part of and there's sometimes a little nod or a smile of like, yep, we got our ashes today.
That's a profound insight, Carrie, and it's coupled for my students and me with the wonderful positive part of the shared experience of the ineffable that comes with family and community.
Yes.
But the negative danger of that in tribalism and nativism and that which can separate us, and of course the human mystery is to try to find the balance of those two and appreciate the one without embracing the other.
But there's also a way in which it allows us to kind of channel some of that negative energy if we do it in a healthy way, right? Because as you say, we don't go to war over baseball, but there's a way in which, you know, baseball, actually can make it less likely for us to go to war because we have this way of kind of channeling that rivalry. Would you agree with that, John?
Yes, I would, and I take it a step farther and even make it more positive to the extent that we can actually put ourselves in the other's shoes for a few moments and see both the world and ourselves. You know, if we could only see ourselves as others see us, see ourselves through the eyes of the other, then it not only becomes that we can channel these unfortunate instincts in a more benign way, but in fact, you know, when you asked me if I had a dog in the fight right now, aren't we all more or less, unless we're White Sox fans, rooting for the Cubs?
Yeah.
So there's a way in which you can empathize through this process as well.
Well, as somebody, you know, I forget who said it in the Boston Globe last week, but, you know, every self-respecting Red Sox fan should be rooting for the Cubs.
Right. It's well put.
Yeah. I think that's true. You know, we had a comment on our website about your book saying that, first of all, that this person was going to go out and buy it along with Stephen King's book on baseball, which is, that's pretty high praise to put you in that company. But also saying something very similar. He wrote, there is certainly something transcendent about baseball. But as you say, there is something that's kind of inherently oriented toward the transcendent in all of these places where we come together and we create a space that is sacred, a sense of community, and a shared kind of symbolic or quote unquote liturgical experience.
There's no question about that, and I think if the more one develops the talent to I call it with my students, think slow, live slow. Okay, just in this world of modernity where things proceed so rapidly and it's a world of hyperstimulation, occasionally step out and it's contemplation, it's meditation, and it's not just in baseball. That's why we said baseball as a road to God. It's in every facet. It's when periodically, as I will this coming July, with my kids and now with my grandkids, we take 9 days and we go on the river in the Grand Canyon and you think slow. And there's literally a almost a biological change in your makeup as you begin to notice things you would otherwise miss. And that's the wonder of creation. And it gets you to that ineffable transcendent moment.
Yeah, indeed it does. You know, John, I was also I'm thinking this week of Father Jim DiGiacomo, the late Father Jim DiGiacomo, who you knew, of course, from Brooklyn Prep, and he was a diehard Cubs fan, as you know. And he actually would say, he said, I have a do not resuscitate order if I'm in that state, except unless the Cubs are in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, and you know, Deej, of course, brought everything together because he was a great student of religion and really transformed the way religion is taught in some of the Jesuit high schools of this city and the country. But he was also the person that translated the then lamentable Mets theme song, which was Meet the Mets.
That's right.
And he translated it into Latin.
And
I could still hear him. I visited him in Murray Weigel Hall, where the senior citizen Jesuits are, in the last days of his life, and he could hardly speak. But when I began to sing softly to him, O curite metibus, he sang right along. He could remember the words.
That's a lovely way to actually end our conversation, John. Thanks so much for being with us, and congratulations on all of your accomplishments at New York University. And I do encourage our listeners to check out the book, Baseball as a Road to God, Seeing Beyond the Game. It's really terrific. It's quite insightful, and it's a lot of fun. John, thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you. Bye-bye.
All right. God bless.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.